Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Janet Foster Show, the show that gives you real talk for action. Today is a really hot day here in Los Angeles. Fall starts tomorrow, but it seems like summer is acting like that bad relative that won't go away or just won't go home. Hopefully tomorrow with the first day of fall coming in, we can get some relief from this heat and the drought, because I think it's, as I was walking in the studio today, the heat from the concrete was about to knock me out. I was so glad to be inside. But I want to thank everybody for listening. And I know for our audience here in Los Angeles, it's kind of tricky because, you know, we've got football season in full swing. So some people are kind of double playing us. And I want to thank you, because some people have sent us messages that they'll have the game on, whether it's the Chargers, the Raiders, or the 49ers. They will have the game on, but they'll be listening. The sound, we get the sound. So I appreciate you for doing that. And for all of our listeners that are listening. And I just want to not only let you know that I appreciate all the kind words that you have been sending me, whether it's been tweets or messages on Facebook. I'm trying to come up with a way to acknowledge your messages on the air as well. And we'll get that going pretty soon. I just appreciate the love and how you're sharing the mission of this show. Real talk for action. We're just not talking about it, and I'm not having guests come on that are just going to talk and drone on about things. It's you're definitely going to get action in terms of things if you want to get involved to join them. This has been such a great journey that we started, and I don't know what to say other than thank you. And as I continue to move forward, I definitely want to share the love with the listeners, because I appreciate you so much. Also, as always, you can get social with me on Facebook at Janet Foster, and on Twitter and Instagram, you can find me at Janet D. Foster, and that's D for Deborah. Certainly, do hit me up. I do manage this. This is just a little show that can, so which means I don't have someone that's taking care of my social media. It's all me. I do, when you see posts, it's all me. When I get to it, I get to it. But definitely, you are communicating directly with me. As we get into today's show, one of the things that kind of drove why today's topic is on deck today is based on the feedback that I'm getting from you, the listeners, from the time that we just started talking about this subject on this show last month. And I've gotten requests to do continuous follow-ups. So this is kind of where today's topic came from. And today's topic is follow-up on the situation in the Dominican Republic. The citizenship crisis in terms of how that country has decided that Dominicans of Haitian descent were to be stripped of their nationality. So that's one area that our listeners, you have definitely given me feedback that more talk needs to be done about it. A lot of you, I really appreciate you even telling me if you hear where you live. And we've started to get more listeners outside of the Los Angeles area, which I think is fabulous, because a lot of times we don't get a lot of the news from other parts of the country, even though we are the number two media market in the country. But as a part of our ongoing watch in our series that's called Justice for Haiti, my guest today is the president of the Haitian American Professional Network. Patrick Brutus is here today. We are going to talk about updates on the Dominican Republic situation, as well as other activities within the diaspora And also one thing that I am looking forward to talking to him about is kind of activities, because that's a lot of feedback that I've gotten from a lot of you in your messages to me is what can I do? And we're going to talk about that today. So without further ado, since I'm talking too much, we're going to bring on our guest, Mr. Patrick Brutus. Patrick, are you there?
Hi, Janet. I'm here. Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello. Thank you so much for joining me. I know you are there in Chicago in the Central Time Zone, so it's kind of your dinner hour. So thank you for joining us late afternoon.
No, I'm very pleased and honored to be on your show this afternoon for you, this evening for me. And I want to say hi to all your podcasts and listeners, followers, and those who are fans of the Janet Foster Show. And so, yes, what we do have going on in Haiti is a serious, serious issue. And I'm very excited here to talk to you more about that today.
Well, that is fabulous, because that's exactly what our listeners want to know about. Any updates, the last thing that our audience has had, and based on some of the information that I've shared with the audience, is that there were six U.S. senators that, I think it was last month, they sent a letter, a kind of a team letter to Secretary of State Kerry, asking for intervention in the citizenship crisis in the Dominican Republic. And if there are any updates on either, if you are aware of any updates on that situation, as well as anything else that's going on that you could share with us. That's something our audience really wants to know about.
Yeah, so good question to start off this conversation. This deportation crisis is really, we're looking at it as a human rights violation. And these people here who are Dominicans, as well as Haitians with Dominicans of Haitian descent, they're being deported back to Haiti, and this effective date was February 17, 2015. This stems from a ruling in 2010 that created these categories of folks in transit. And, this is their immigration policy. They have a right to establish one. So what they established was a criteria of folks in transit dating back to 1929.
And okay.
The people who originally came to the Dominican Republic from Haiti originally came in, migrant workers came to work in the sugarcane field industry. And this is a huge business in the Caribbean, obviously, as you can imagine. Dominican as well as Haiti, they have a large sugarcane industry. Haitians were coming across the border to work in the fields of the sugar canes. Their immigration policy has stated that people who, from 1929 to current, who have come over, and we've got decades of folks now being born as Dominicans.
Mm-hmm.
These folks, they have to establish and prove their residency, otherwise they will be deported. Now, here's the funny thing about this, Janet. We're talking about someone from as far back as 1929. In theory, that person could be 85 years old or older today.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. An individual who, and these are, generations of people who were born, they only know the Dominican as their home country. They more than likely only speak one language, Spanish.
Right.
They more than likely do not have any, real understanding or knowledge of the Haitian culture. They don't speak the language French. They don't speak the secondary primary language Creole. They don't, probably travel back and forth to Haiti. They probably are, as the Dominicans are, in the way they regard Haitians as a lower class people. So for all intents and purposes, these quote-unquote Dominicans are fully Dominican. Yet, because they were born and come from a heritage of Haitian folks, and they probably are darker skinned.
Mm-hmm.
They are deemed as folks who have to prove up their citizenship, and or thus be deported. Now, the Dominicans and Haitians have a very interesting history between the two. Now, as you know, the island of Hispaniola has two republics, two free countries, Haiti on the western peninsula and Dominican Republic on the east. As your listeners know, Haiti is the first black republic in the world. We fought back our oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
The great general Toussaint Louverture, a former slave, led a rebellion in 1791. He was imprisoned in France. Jean-Jacques Dessalines took over. Henri Christophe is our next great hero, who was the first king of Haiti. And our Declaration of Independence, as it were, is January 1st, 1804. Haiti is recognized today and is a member of the Latin Union, CARICOM, the Organization of American States, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. They're a UN member as well. And Haiti is a recognized free country. And all sovereign countries have a right to establish policies that fit, you know, the will of the people and, you know, obviously make sense for their policies and, you know, economics, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But what we cannot accept, Janet, is a policy that is rooted in racism. That
yes.
destabilizes people, denationalizes them, renders them stateless, and effectively, you know, treats them as a lower class citizen in a country where they are citizens. So this is something that we, you know, we feel is a backward step in the way that we should be regarding people in the world today.
Right.
And the silence from, you know, mainstream media is alarming. The non-action by the U.S. Until recently has been alarming. And the world international community has not forcefully interceded to date.
Yeah,
into this issue.
You know,
and
I want
to. It's a huge problem for those of us in the diaspora.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to pause there for a moment because a couple of points that you made basically on the world silence. And as a journalist, I have to say, I continue to be stunned by the lack of reporting on here in the United States for sure, because based on historic reasons, I know you laid out for us the history of Haiti, but in terms of how the United States is caught up with, some of my listeners realize that we are in the middle of that, whether our government chooses to take action or not. Largely because we are the largest purchaser of sugar, from the Dominican Republic, as well as a lot of our financial backing of two industries, and particularly the sugar industry, because we have American companies. Some Americans may not be aware that some American companies actually are the businesses that are brought in a lot of migrants over
huge
decades.
Huge investors.
Yeah, basically, right. it's the equivalent of blood money, in the sense if you think about it, it's very alarming there. But and also the other industry where the United States we are the largest tourist population to the Dominican Republic. And again, that's blood money coming in too. How can you rightfully enjoy yourself knowing that a government has just at will decided, okay, these people, someone who was born in the Dominican Republic in the 1980s or even the 70s, they're no longer going to be here. We're kicking them out. That kind of thing. What I want to ask you, about that is you talked about a lot of organizations that Haiti is a member of. I believe that, wasn't it the Organization of American States issued a report about the situation that's going on down there?
So the Organization of American States has been the most vocal proponent of denouncing the actions of the Dominican government's policy against this class of people. We are very happy about their steps to try to be a leader in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Dominican Republic has currently an application that's being held by CARICOM. So CARICOM is the organization of Caribbean nations that provide a opportunity for these countries to do commerce amongst themselves, right? So, you know, like you said, so sugar is a big industry, and so maybe some art and culture or some other things in, you know, Bahamas, Jamaica, et cetera. So all these countries are doing business with each other. And CARICOM is an organization that promotes that.
Right.
They are currently holding up the application.
Good for them.
Of the DR to become a member state. So CARICOM, very strong. We're very supportive of them, and we're happy that they're taking leadership action. OAS, as you mentioned just recently, stepping up to the table. We're very supportive of that. But let me get back to your original question about what the U.S. Statement on this has been.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very, we're not as content. We're happy that they finally have said something. But here's the problem. The effective date of deportation was February 17, 2015. This issue has been going on for decades. And thank God for social media and Facebook and Twitter. We've been able to see images and videos of the mistreatment of these people
mm-hmm.
by Dominicans and by regular Dominican people. Not only law enforcement, but regular Dominican people taking the law into their own hands
wow.
and trying to really, you know, get these people to flee by physical force.
Wow.
And thank God for videos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these things have been going on, in that sense of our public awareness for at least a year. Now, the U.S. has said nothing. The JASPER has been complaining as vocally as possible for over a year on some of the abuses that these people have taken.
Mm-hmm.
And the deportation started in February. The U.S. had said nothing. March, the U.S. had said nothing. April, May, June, July. So they have said nothing for months until, as reported on CNN, some relief workers and peace workers came back after working in the DR to monitor, you know, these conditions and the situation going on, and came back and had a press conference really identifying the deplorable conditions that people were, you know, in
mm-hmm.
surrounding the deportations and the management of that and just the continued abuses that people were facing. And until then, and only until then, they had said nothing. And immediately afterwards, on August 14th, Secretary Kerry, via the State Department, put out a public statement on the issue. And quite honestly, that statement was not as strong as it, you know, could have been. Certainly not as strong as the people at us in the JAFRA would have wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
They simply reaffirmed their sovereign rights as a country to, you know, have an immigration policy and, you know, to undergo a deportation process and only encourage them to try to safeguard and preserve the rights of humans as they go through this process. We think they could have said more. We think they should have done more.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you know, that has fueled the many thousands and millions of people in the diaspora and wherever we live. For example, I'm in Chicago. You know, we mm-hmm. have recognized many thousands of folks in the United States in terms of our main centers in New York, where we are in large numbers, in Florida, where we are in large numbers, Massachusetts, where we are in large numbers.
Right.
Many of us in the diaspora have have tried to take it up a notch in our respective metropolitan areas. And so you've seen protests in New York. You've seen political statements of support, resolutions denouncing these actions in Florida. You've seen in Massachusetts, you've seen political statements of support by their state assembly. So we've taken it up a notch, and then we'll get into what we're doing here in Chicago in a minute. But we've taken it up a notch because there has been inaction from our government, right? Our government here. And so, you know, we certainly would have, you know, been vocal in our pleas for the Dominican Republic to immediately suspend this process, this action, this policy, and have a complete reversal of fortune. But it would have been a whole lot more supportive knowing that we had the backing of the United States government and its political leaders to, you know, give us that extra push.
Right.
Now, what we've heard recently is that the Dominican Republic has a very strong lobbyist working in Washington on their behalf, obviously because we've really started this online campaign of hashtag boycott DR.
Okay.
And, you know, that is a major, as you stated earlier, a major source of, you know, revenue and for the DR. That's their, you know, their industry is tourism. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we can get, you know, as many people as possible understanding this issue, having sympathy for the people and realizing the economics behind these kinds of things and the adverse impacts that it has, you know, and hopefully they can be supportive of us taking stances to, you know, not support them while they do not support the people, right? So, but the United States, as you indicated earlier, is a serious, large, you know, powerhouse giant, right? So mm-hmm. the United States has a history with Haiti as well. And currently, the United States is heavily invested in terms of policy, in terms of practice, in terms of initiative, in terms of implementation in regards to the reconstruction and redevelopment of Haiti.
Yes.
As you know, your listeners have been following the news. Haiti now is in its, you know, almost fifth year since the earthquake that really hit our island very hard, January 12, 2010. We're in, you know, year five of you know, overcoming that. And I'll just say quickly that the Haitian people are very resilient. They're very strong. You know, this was a very dramatic incident, very, you know, emotional for many of us. But the Haiti that we see today is a Haiti full of strong individuals, strong people, strong nation. I believe that we will prove that to the world we are as strong as ever, and the Haiti that we will see be rebuilt would be a Haiti that the world will be proud of. And so we look forward to the, you know, culmination of that ongoing redevelopment of our country.
Good. I want to catch you for a moment. Two other points that you brought up. The one about the social media hashtag boycott DR. I want to ask you about that. You mentioned that's an effective campaign via social media. Is there a particular group within the diaspora that's behind the boycott DR that kind of leads to action? Because the reason why I'm asking is that's one of the questions that our audience kind of posed was they see that hashtag and a lot of people want to act and support, but they want to make sure that there's something behind it. Because, you know, a lot of times with hashtag activism, it could be a hashtag here today and it's not tied to an organization, or it's not helping an organization prove points. So is someone monitoring that and actually using that activity?
So I would say for myself personally, it's one of the first hashtags that I started posting about on my Facebook and Twitter. And I know that I'm posting, you know, religiously, you know, Haiti-related you know, news articles and every, you know, thing I do, I always end up with a post with a hashtag boycott DR. Now, I would not say that it's a orchestrated, you know, coordinated campaign, but what I will say is that I've noticed and I've seen on many of, for example, the Facebook Haitian or Haiti-related pages, I've seen a lot of boycott DR. Now, I can't, you know, tell you for sure that we've got a national campaign that's coordinated and there's a social media advisor, you know, advising all of us and guiding us in the hashtag boycott DR. But I tell you one thing, we're going to start a hashtag divest in DR next.
Because okay.
I think that's where we now have to take it up another notch right now in terms of trying to, on a similar track, look at this situation and compare it to the injustices that the South Africans were facing
exactly.
back in the late 80s when, and when, you know, President Mandela, after he got released, he ran for president. It's at that point that I believe a lot of the, leaders in the black community here and, you know, across the world were looking at how can we stand in support of Nelson Mandela. And, you know, we saw that there are many countries, many companies here in this country that were still doing business in South Africa. And so there was a strong and very successful divest in South Africa campaign. It was very successful. And that's our next logical step here. We really cannot afford to wait for incremental steps and policy changes to occur.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be very active. And, you know, the time that we live in now, the digital age with millennials and with our, you know, next generation Gen Xers, you know, these are ways to immediately collapse time frames in terms of getting your message out by simply, you know, doing the at on Twitter or hashtag your issue or your concern. And when those things start to, you know, catch steam, you know, whoa, baby, watch out. So it can really take on. And, you know, we've seen that demonstrated by the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement that started, you know, once the Ferguson thing really hit a, you know, fever pitch.
You know what? You sort of segued into my second question when you talked about the divestment, because now that we know that the boycott DR, it does seem to be possible. The divestiture, that was going to be my next thing that I was going to get into, kind of either divesting in a lot of activities with the Dominican Republic, as well as what kinds of activities can people do now to support Haiti? Would it be good to begin to book trips to Port-au-Prince, since actually one of the airlines that flies to the Dominican Republic actually has flights to Port-au-Prince, in terms of the tourist industry? Because a lot of people I've noticed on social media, they'll say, okay, I will boycott the DR, but I'm going to support Haiti. I'm booking my trip to Haiti. And are there any groups within the diaspora that's helping out and getting tourism, getting people to switch?
Well, I would say that that is a fantastic way to really turn around someone's viewpoint on this.
Yeah, money. So,
absolutely. So let me just put a pin in that for a second. And what I'll say is here in Chicago, and I'll come back to that real quick.
Uh-huh.
I just want to make this this link here. In Chicago, unfortunately, we don't have a critical mass compared to as the numbers that we can demonstrate in Florida and especially in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago's Haitian American kind of Haitian population in our, you know, Illinois/Chicagoland area is about, I would say, 30 to 45 to 50,000 strong. And so the way that we have to operate in the space that we have here in the Midwest is a little bit different than what we normally see in, you know, New York or Miami or even not Massachusetts and, you know, stay tuned, Atlanta, right? So, you know, the Haitian kind of community is different here. So what we've done is we've done some work behind the scenes to kind of stay active and join the rest of the diaspora in really pushing this issue trying to raise awareness. And we've come up here, we've come up with three kind of main mission focuses for us in our work here in Chicago: education, legislative, and advocacy. Those are the three areas that we're going to try to make our impact here in Chicago. So on education, you know, and this is where it ties in, you know, in a way to what you suggested, which I think is very strong, and I agree, and I'll start talking about that after today, is, you know, instead of, or, you know, boycott DR and travel Haiti, right? So education is, you know, this situation here presents a wonderful opportunity for us here as Haitians in the diaspora to really talk about the rich, wonderful, vibrant history of Haiti. It's just a wonderful story, the Haitian story arc, you know, from when we were discovered by Columbus and Hispaniola was populated by the Taino Indians, to Jean-Baptiste Point de Sable, who was a Haitian-born man from St. Mark, who discovered Chicago and is the known and recognized founder of this city here in Chicago, to, you know, the political history, the tragedy history, you know, and the rebuilding and resilience of the Haitian people. You know, it's like Rocky. We get knocked down, we get back up. And so we have a rich history, and you know, culminating now in more recent news with the earthquake and now this, you know, renewed issue with the Dominican Republic. Now, since the new president, Martelly, took office, and, you know, timing that with the earthquake and the effort to stabilize and rebuild our country, Haiti has focused on tourism as a main way to really try to gain attention to our travel sector and our industry and show the beautiful side of Haiti. And for those of us who have traveled to Haiti and those of us who know Haitians and know our culture, Haiti is such a beautiful island. You know, for decades in the 80s and 90s, all we saw on mainstream news during the Duvalier crisis and all that going on was the worst images of Haiti that they could find.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. Many folks, you know, had a negative perspective of what Haiti was, and frankly, probably would never have traveled there had they, you know, not known otherwise. And so, but today we are seeing such a wonderful campaign by the tourism minister and the government to promote Haiti. And so you're right. So boycott DR, divest in DR, and travel Haiti. Those are, I think, three hashtags we're going to start to really push now. And okay, we, you know, can't say we're going to be coordinated. You know, we probably need someone to take over that job. But certainly we hope that it catches on, you know, in our social media and our younger folks, and really push that, because Haiti is such a wonderful place. There are so many beautiful locales. You know, there's, again, many investments that are being made. There's a new hotel, a new Marriott. There's another new Royal Oasis Caribbean Hotel in Pétionville. It's just a wonderful country. I encourage you to travel there, Janet, if you haven't had a chance to do so already.
I want to.
Yeah, there are some wonderful beaches. Last year, my family and I went there for my wife and I, our 10-year anniversary. We traveled to Port Salut in the southwest, you know, far southwest part of the island. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful beaches, beautiful travel, beautiful hotels now. Despite the rebuild, there are still wonderful places to see. If you go up north, you'll see the Citadel, which is a famous Haitian base that really at that time positioned Haiti as the most well-protected island in the Caribbean. You know, our history is legendary, beautiful arts and culture. And so, you know, it's just a place to visit, a place to go and return to. And, you know, we are encouraging your listeners as well as folks, you know, to continue to think about Haiti as a Caribbean destination.
Oh, that's excellent. Now, we'll definitely put the hashtags that you just mentioned, boycott DR, divest DR, travel Haiti, on our show's Facebook, as well as Twitter and Instagram. One thing I want to ask you about with divest DR is that particular action, Is that in motion in talks with politicians right now or business leaders? Because we know, and you've mentioned earlier, that there's a huge investment that the U.S. is making in Haiti's recovery, and people are at the table. Companies, American companies, are looking to come in and to be a part of to be a part of the economic rebuilding and even the new structure of Haiti. In terms of divestment in DR, you know, one of the things that we do know, besides our financial support of the you know, a couple of industries that I've mentioned, but also the DR gets U.S. aid too, and you know, is there any kind of motion that's being kind of presented where potentially we're able to get updates or follow updates on any divestment activity?
So it's certainly a new call for the diaspora on this, and I know we're going to really start talking about that in our advocacy part here in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
But what we've seen here is we've seen some leadership from the Haitian government. I posted this today on my Facebook or on Twitter, and we've seen that Haiti has instituted a ban of 23 products. Now, I don't know those products, but they've done a ban of 23 commercial products that they normally do business with the DR. So much now that the DR is concerned that government officials today or this weekend put out a statement saying that this product ban could have a net negative result of $500 million to the DR economy.
Huh.
The economy of the Dominican Republic. Now, personally, and, you know, as a member of the DEFRA, I think this is a very strong statement from the Haitian government.
Yes, it is.
And the contrary statements from the government officials in the DR that say they need to talk to Haiti and they need to reconsider this product ban because it's going to have a net negative of $500 million to their economy, that is the point. That
right.
is the point, is that it, you know, impacts you economically because that's where you feel the pinch. Now, we're boycotting DR, we're, you know, going to be calling for a divestment strategy and initiatives so that U.S. companies understand that they cannot and should not be doing business with a country that has a policy that is targeting, you know, people of color simply because they are black.
And or darker.
It's a legacy to their racist past, and it's continued practice that should not be tolerated. And, you know, while we're seeing, the Syrian refugee crisis right now, which is an ongoing issue in the Middle East, as these mm-hmm. folks are leaving the country, going to all parts of Europe, et cetera, and the USA has stated publicly that they are, going to, accept and enter and receive up to 100,000 Syrian refugees. We're not seeing the same kind of similar support for the people of Haitian descent who are Dominican and Dominican-born that are being deported back to Haiti.
Absolutely.
We think that this is a similar situation that requires a equivalent level of support. And we have been, looking for leadership from the U.S. in this. And the government needs to take a more substantive step forward to support the people, because what we said here is that there is a huge investment from the United States government in Haiti. But what we're not seeing is a equivalent or equitable level of that same investment in the people and support of them and their human rights. And so to me and to many of us, that's kind of out of balance. And we need to see that same kind of support for the people.
You are so right. The point that you made about the Syrian refugee crisis, definitely we're not downplaying their situation, but just think in terms of distance, that's way across the world. And this is the crisis And the Dominican Republic is in our same hemisphere, and it's basically something that we've been bankrolling for centuries, basically.
Right.
And that's an issue. I want to move to another part of the discussion, because we've pretty much established that our government really is not doing anything, and I want to kind of talk about you kind of mentioned the Black Lives Matter campaign. And one of the things that comes to mind to me as a journalist of color is, there has always been a kind of a disconnect from, I would say, the old guard Black community in terms of working with other groups of color. And particularly one of the things that in my research, I've noticed the absence of even discussions this year by members of the Congressional Black Caucus. There hasn't been any noise. They kind of made some noise back in 2013, but they've been basically silent as a collective this year. And I kind of want to get an idea of maybe within the diaspora, has there been any other types of support for Haiti in general, as well as the citizenship crisis in the Dominican Republic from other areas within the African American community? Because you did describe something right in terms of images from the 80s and 90s, particularly for Gen Xers, because we were around when Jean Pedron Aristide kind of came in, and we were really excited. I was in Miami. I was a reporter at the time in Miami, and I actually did a lot of interviews in Little Haiti in Miami. And what I always kind of noticed was there was a fine line between the Black community and the Haitian community. There was some togetherness in Miami because there were some politicians that were of Haitian descent that they kind of made some bridges with government, with government officials. But have you gotten any kind of support, whether it's NAACP or anything? Has the diaspora seen any support?
So I just love the way that your voice inflection goes up at the end of that statement, because you're right. It is a puzzling conundrum when you pose that. So let's just stay focused on your original premise, which was based on the CBC. And so locally here in Chicago, we've developed a little roadshow where we've gone and tried to talk to our Illinois delegation of, U.S. Congress members, and we've met with two congressmen, and unofficially a third. So we've met and discussed this issue with three U.S. congressmen. The reviews are mixed. The pledges of support are mixed. We've gotten some support in terms of logistics here locally and how to take a next step in terms of our advocacy on this issue from one, which will be welcome that, and we're happy to have received that. The other one was kind of mixed, and we know the other one is very supportive of the local diaspora. Now, on a national basis, let's take a snapshot and go with me here a little bit, Janet.
Okay.
This past half week to this weekend, culminating last night, we had a wonderful demonstration of the power and influence of the Congressional Black Caucus in D.C. this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And what a wonderful weekend it was. And what a wonderful opportunity it could have been for these Black Caucus members who serve and are elected by us, the people, to represent our views. And the role of the U.S. congressman is not only to, politics as local focus. It's the U.S. Congress. You're voting and looking at and reviewing and, discussing international affairs.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at things that happen across the world and the U.S.'s, policy in those places. And we are certainly talking right now in this current campaign for, you know, who will be our next president, immigration. It's a hot topic. It is the number one topic on the Republican, you know, platform right now. And we have a, you know, gala hall full of black legislators.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it have been wonderful for them to have set aside some of their panel discussions? Wouldn't it have been wonderful for them to have a featured speaker discuss even for 10 minutes? And wouldn't it have been even more impressive if the president spoke, you know, about what is going on with people of color right on our doorstep, right next door to us in a country or on an island, Hispaniola, that we are heavily invested in on both sides of the line, and talk about the impact that the Dominicans have made in an adverse way on people of color, the Haitian people, and talk about a policy about how we can use the strength of Congress to suspend or hold up appropriations to the Dominican Republic. Or if we could have heard any of these people talk about, you know, what they're going to do to push the administration to take a firmer stance on the DR and their 100% need to suspend this policy that's really not fair immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that window, that was an opportunity for CBC members. And I'm sure that folks had been lobbying and talking to them in New York, in Massachusetts, in Florida. Certainly we've been doing it here in Chicago. And so at least those congressmen had an opportunity to talk about it. And fun fact, we actually have a Haitian-American congressman serving out of Utah, the Honorable Maya Love, and she's a Republican, but she's a member of Congress. And so we actually have a Haitian-American. And,
yes.
And yet still, Janet, no one is talking about what's going on right next door. And
yeah.
So that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem and an opportunity miss on the CBC. Now, maybe it wasn't the venue for that conversation, but certainly it should have been a moment for them to reflect and take a minute to talk about this. They've had panel discussions and meetings. And so that's an opportunity fail. It's a leadership fail. You know, certainly they have a second opportunity or a third chance to get it right, and we're hopeful that they will. But in the meantime, 40,000 people have left the island voluntarily in fear of sticking around because of their, you know, rights are being violated, their safety is at risk.
Right.
You know, we've got 10,000 people who have died from cholera from mm-hmm. the outbreak that the United Nations peacekeeping people from Nepal, you know, started in Haiti. We've got, you know, two or three cities on the southern, you know, border in southern Haiti. We've got people there who have, you know, been deported, who are now setting up tent cities along the border because Haiti, unfortunately, is not in a real position infrastructure-wise to absorb, you know, the thousands of people. And just so you know, that the targeted population of this immigration policy that the DR has established and reaffirmed is potentially up to 500,000 people.
Yes.
Certainly the low minimum guarantee number is about 250,000. So as of now, we've got 40,000 people who have left. We've got about 2,500 people documented who have been deported, according to the Dominican Republic, you know, information that has been able to get, you know, get shaken out. This is a huge problem for, again, a leadership fail. We've got a vacuum of leadership here, and, you know, that's just unfortunate.
It is.
When you say, what is the CBC doing? What are our elected officials doing? Let's look at it from that standpoint and understand that we have more work to do, you know, here still to encourage our people to take a hard look at this and take some steps to call on U.S. companies to divest, call on U.S. travelers to, you know, not go to the DR and support their economy. And it's another opportunity for us to encourage the Haitian government to be vigilant and be vigilant and be strong and firm in the face of a continued, you know, potential economic impact to their businesses, but for them to hold the line on that product ban that they've done.
Yeah.
And
Definitely.
You know, the last thing I'll say, Janet, the last thing I'll say real quick, I know we're running out of time, is, you know, when we call for a boycott DR and we call for a divestment in DR, we still have to be somewhat sensitive, because many of our brothers and sisters who live and work in the industries that, you know, these companies affect, you know, in the DR, you know, that's a source of income for them. So while we're calling for hard steps to be taken, we need to be somewhat still sensitive to those who are, you know, able to demonstrate their citizenship legally and stay, you know, in the DR and work still, and still, you know, somewhat be sensitive to their, you know, potential economic impact, you know, to them as well. But these are positions that we in the JASPERA need to take. We need to have the government back us up here and take the same stances alongside with us, so we can actually see dynamic, quick, static, radical change in the DR as soon as possible.
Excellent. One final question I have for you is, for our listeners, since we don't get very much news here on the West Coast, are there some sources, is there a particular site that you could recommend for our listeners to maybe join? I'm going to tell them to start following you, but is there somewhere where they know that they can get information on Haiti?
So we are working in Chicago with a number of community organizations here in the Chicago diaspora, and we all have our own websites. And, you know, we have ours. Ours is www.hapnchicago.com, and we'll be updating our website in short order to reflect all the information that we've been able to accumulate, all the work that we've done, and, you know, provide updates of where the things are right now on the ground. But basically, we've just been, you know, posting on our Facebook page as well. We've been looking at the other sites that are in our, you know, JASPERA here. But honestly, the best source for information for us in terms of getting real information has been, you know, Reuters, you know, Reuters.com, that news site, as well as
the AP.
Yeah, the AP. We've actually gone to non-traditional, non-mainstream news to get real information. Unfortunately, the mainstream news continues to not really follow the story.
Okay. And what's your Facebook page as well?
So our Facebook page is the Haitian American Professional Network Facebook page. Also, you can hit me up at Facebook, Patrick Brutus. It'll be the the good-looking Patrick Brutus. There's a couple of Patrick Brutus in the world.
We'll make sure they'll point out the correct one.
My name is not unique, unfortunately, so there's a couple. But Patrick Brutus, and you'll hopefully be able to make that connection match. Again, I gave you my website information. My Twitter is at Brutus Real Talk.
Okay.
And just try to follow us. We've got wonderful people in the Haitian American community, as well as the Haitian community right there in Haiti, that really aren't getting the opportunities to really be part of the process of rebuilding our country. We've got technical capacity, we've got you know, skills, we've got the, you know, technical know-how, and, you know, we're not getting those real opportunities. So, you know, this is a real chance for us to present a broader agenda for the Haitian community and our development concerns and our public health, etc. So just look out for more. We hope to be back on your show talking about further things and further developments, and hopefully we can have some better news.
Oh, yeah. I'm having you back. That's for sure. And Patrick, thank you so much. And we'll make sure that we have all of this information on our website, and I'll make sure to tweet that out to our followers of the show. And, you know, our time is up this week, but I just want to tell our audience that we will stay on this and we'll get more information about what's going on in the Dominican Republic, as well as, you know, traveling Haiti. And, you know, for the listeners that actually suggested that, thank you for even bringing that forward. And certainly I will share with our audience the hashtags that were mentioned today. And I want you all, listeners, have a great week. And we will be back here, same place, same time. And again, thanks for listening.